a frequency beyond space and time.
Unspeakable knowledge. It is Mad Tower Radio.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Mad Tower Radio. I'm joined by my co-host Christian. My name is Dan, and we are here today to bring you some stories, cryptids, conspiracies, anything interesting that kind of borders on the unexplained.
Mm-hmm.
How are you doing, Christian?
Good. It feels like we were just here. We're on our special back-to-back weekend recording session, yeah?
Uh-huh. It is our double dose week, but I don't mind, you know. So I'm in great spirits today. Randomly, I got the day off work, so.
Oh shit.
I'm wiling out. I've been up since 9:30, just going crazy on the computer, looking up cryptids and all that good stuff.
Yeah, you've given me just the smallest bit of information on this one. Usually I get a little more of a morsel, but I'm kind of in the dark here.
This one is really awesome. I'm here, like, last week you did a review of a documentary on Hulu by a man named David. Now, I am here to plug a documentary on Hulu by a man named David, because it's insane. I want to get into it. I guess we'll just get into it, then cut the bullshit. Huh?
Absolutely.
So, David Politis was formerly a police detective, and now he works as a writer and a documentarian on his Missing 411 series. He is also a Bigfoot researcher, as he directs and founded the North American Bigfoot Search. And,
okay.
He goes around and he researches missing persons cases that have strange or mysterious circumstances. And I don't want to waste any more of your time, man, because this could get a little beefy. So let me just move right into it and tell you the story of Mr. Thomas Messick.
Okay.
Tom was an elderly man who lived in northeastern New York, who absolutely loved being outdoors. He was a very experienced outdoorsman. He was a World War II veteran and was actively involved in the community, teaching hunting and survival classes. He rarely drank, and he was described by everyone to generally be of upstanding character and the best outdoorsman they know, despite him being 80 years old, only having one eye, and being hard of hearing.
Hmm.
On November 15th, 2015, Tom went on a hunting trip to Lily Pond in New York with his best friends and his sons. It was their first time hunting in that area, and the group split up into hunters and watchers. The watchers were all the elderly men, including Thomas Messick, and they were all in their 80s. Now, you'll have to excuse my limited hunting knowledge. I've never been hunting, so I don't know if this is exactly what they were trying to do. But Tom was in the watchers group, and the other dudes, their sons, the younger guys, they were like, hey, you guys chill here. We're going to go around up this hill and we're going to scare the deer off the hill towards you guys so you can get a shot.
That right? makes sense to me. I'm not a hunter, but I get it.
Yep. So they went up there and Tom sat down on a tree stump with nothing but his clothes, a rifle with 3 to 4 bullets, and a snack. Now, Tom was the farthest one away from the lake, but they weren't more than 100 yards from the lake. They weren't more than 50 feet from each other. I don't know how thick the woods I don't know how thick the woods are out there, you know, so I don't know if they could see each other.
Okay.
Out there, but they all seemed to know generally where they all were. Right, in relation to each other. So all these old guys are waiting at the bottom of the hill. And later on, one of Tom's friends, a man named Sid, would describe that he heard a different type of noise that you don't usually hear in the woods, coming from up on the hill. The rest of the men gathered back around the trucks at around 3 p.m., and Tom was nowhere to be found. The men immediately broke back into the woods, firing off shots, calling for Tom until sundown and trying to hail him on the walkie-talkie. At which point, they split into groups. Three went back to camp to get some rest, and the other three stayed there with the trucks, with the lights on, firing off more shots, driving up and down the road they took to get to this lake, looking for Tom. The very next day, search and rescue started up in a town that was down the stream from Lily Pond called Horicon, New York. And no expense was fucking spared, man. The Air National Guard flew planes and helicopters over the woods with thermal imaging. They executed a technique called bump lines, which you tie a rope and you walk that rope down, and then you tie another one maybe like 10 feet across, and then you like search that like a grid, and when you like go from one rope to the other, you tie another rope. So you're basically creating a grid of ropes. Like
real thorough searching. Okay.
Just absolutely crazy amount. Every body of water that they encountered in the search, they got divers in there searching for them.
Okay.
And throughout this whole thing, not a single shred of evidence of this man, Thomas Messick, had surfaced. And on the fourth day of the search, two FBI agents showed up after no one in law enforcement contacted them. So usually how FBI works is that it's not like the movies where the FBI just shows up and they're like, we're taking over this. If a local police department starts an investigation, they have to request for the FBI to come. Right? So nobody contacted the FBI, but they showed up, and they also don't investigate missing persons. The FBI only comes when they suspect foul play or it's like extremely young children.
But this dude's like 80, yeah, you said?
Yep, he's 80, 82 years old when he disappeared.
I mean,
and then
this dude's practically dust. Just let him return to the forest,
I guess. But the search ended formally on November 26, 2015. And to this day, his friends and family still look for him, but absolutely no trace of Tom Messick has been found. And here's a direct quote from one of Tom's sons. He says, something odd happened, obviously. We just don't know what. So,
obviously.
What do you think about that so far? We're going to get into the weird stuff here in a minute, I promise.
You had said this is upstate New York?
Yep, upstate New York.
I just left upstate New York, and I was surprised at how hilly it is and how crazy forested it is. I had thought a lot less of the state, to be honest.
Yeah. So, you said it was really forested out there?
It's forested, yeah, and it's straight, like, Appalachian out there. It's super mountainous in a way that I hadn't really expected. So I could
really
totally believe a dude or a hunting party going out there and losing all sense of direction. Sure. An old dude? Why not?
Well, I mean, these guys weren't that far from the road. It's not like they were going off the grid for this hunting trip, you know?
Yeah.
They were on state land. They hit... Tom was right next to the road.
Do we know if this man has any experience previously? Like hunting? Is he an outdoorsy kind of guy?
Tom?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Tom, I said it briefly in the intro that Tom, he was a super, super big outdoorsman.
All right.
He was a World War II vet. He, like, everyone that David Pilates interviews says, like, there's one guy who was like, yeah, like, Tom taught the class for me to get my hunting license. And he taught like survival classes and hunting classes everywhere, you know? So he was super big in the hunting community. Like all his sons say that like he was an outdoorsman from like the day he was born.
See, I'm starting to almost expect the weird, the foul play thing, but also dudes at that age, they just kind of disintegrate, you know? Like the dudes are doing good and then all of a sudden you're done.
I mean, maybe, but we don't know what happened because he has not been found.
Do you have another suggestion or a theory to provide?
Well, let me go ahead and move into some of the weird stuff that happened.
Cool.
During this case, right? So the search and rescue coordinator reports that the entire time they were out there, they saw no wildlife, like no squirrels, no birds, nothing moving around at all.
Interesting. Okay.
The canines could not get a hold of Tom Messick's scent. And then David did some digging on his own and found out that the FBI has been monitoring cases like this since the 60s. And then the FBI refused to return any phone calls and inquiries about their involvement with the case.
After they had very, like, publicly shown up?
Yep.
Okay. Like, white. They
came in, monitored the case, left. And then David went and talked to Tom's friend, Sid, and his son. And he said his dad still talks about the sound that he heard today.
Oh, no.
And he described it as a, like, snap, like a cracking, almost like a big trap snapping shut, is the direct quote.
Bro.
And here's the weirdest part. On the 10th day of the search for Tom Messick, a man named Fred Drum, another elderly and seasoned outdoorsman, went missing from Schuylerville, New York, 40 miles south of where they were searching for Tom Messick, and had the same outcome, and he was just gone without a single trace.
Oh, no, dude. Dan, I'm going to upstate New York in a couple weeks. You're kind of freaking me out.
Oh, just, be careful. You know what? You're really lucky because I almost told you the case about Montana.
What?
Well, I guess that makes you unlucky. But I was like, nah, I think the upstate New York one is more interesting.
Yeah, it feels like I'm being foretold, like I'm being prophesized to. But please go on.
But, I mean, that's pretty much the end of it. And that's what your typical missing 411 case looks like. And David investigates a shit ton of these.
This is his bread and butter. It's looking into things like that.
This is his bread and butter. It's looking into things like this and all the weird things about it. In his documentary, he talks about how all these cases have, like, after studying so many of them, he put together a list of, like, the really common factors that he encounters when he's investigating these. And they're, like, there's a point of separation, which is where, like, the person is by themselves. Hmm. And then they are, another one is untrackable by canines. Another one is found in an area previously searched. Boulder fields, near water, geographical clustering, unknown cause of death, a severe weather event during, shortly before, or shortly after the disappearance, missing clothing, and the person being disabled or impaired.
No, I mean, on the onset, that doesn't sound too nefarious and mysterious. It just sounds like, you know, certain high-risk people are going out into the woods and accidents are happening.
Sure. But it's the it's the not a single trace part that kind of fucks me up on this one. Like, where could he have gone? You know what I mean?
I don't know. Like, there's a pretty good source we could tap into if you wanted to ask about missing people in the woods.
Yeah, there is. I actually talked to that man.
Oh, shit.
About it.
Did you really?
Briefly. No. But I had to interview him. I interviewed him for something, and he said, like, for those of you that don't know, Christian and I have a very good friend whose dad is a conservation officer. Mm-hmm. And I think the most fucked up thing that he ever told me was during the summer when, you know, people jump off some of the rocks at the park.
Oh, yeah. We're thinking
to do a sweet dive, you know, and they don't come up. Like, fucked up thing is when he has to turn to the family and be like, look, if he dived in there, this probably isn't a rescue. This is probably just a recovery. I'm like, Jesus Christ.
He always tells me about dudes who fall into the ravines, who fall into the cliffs and shit.
Yeah. He has a lot of fucked up stories, but I don't know if he's ever told me anything with that unexplainable element to it.
Oh, he doesn't find inexplainable flights of stairs leading into the woods.
I mean, this all feels like it's in that vein of, like, something weird is going on in the woods. Now, if you get further into the documentary, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you get further into the documentary, it does get weirder. Like, he gets a, what is it? He talks to this one guy who has a campground, and he talks about how they would go to this campground and they would just hear weird shit in the middle of the night, and that they actually recorded it and sent it to a, like, university to be, like, analyzed by a professional sound team.
Yeah, good
sense. And, like, yeah, because this is one of those things where it had that scrap of truth.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, they sent back the tape and they were like, yeah, this is legit. Like, this is not a hoax tape. The noises that you're hearing cannot be produced by a human.
Oh, God, bro.
Yeah, that was nuts. He actually talks about the Glimmer Man. If you'll remember in my Glimmer Man episode, he talks about the woman who had that encounter in her backyard.
Is that the one whose phone was acting strange?
Yes.
Hmm.
Yes. That was from this documentary, Missing 411, The Haunted.
The Hunted. Okay, that's that's a part of the time.
Yeah,
I've been good to know. Whoa! Oh my God.
Well, this one's called The Hunted because it details specifically hunters. He has a whole fucking series. He has Missing 411 Eastern United States, Missing 411 Western, North America and Beyond, The Devils in the Details, A Sobering Coincidence, Hunters, Off the Grid, Law, Canada, and Montana.
That's
pretty Those are sick. All books. But his only two documentaries are Missing 411 and Missing 411 The Hunted.
The Hunted, bro. Oh.
That's a great, great title.
Well, there was that one part that you had mentioned with the sound of a trap or something closing or something.
Yeah. I mean,
tremendous.
That's it.
Scary.
Yeah. I just don't know what it could be. Like, do you think there's anything to these, or do you think like he's do you think he's just looking too much into it?
Even if he's looking too much into it, I can, you know, applaud a dude for sticking his nose around, you know, looking into these cases. If it is just unfortunate, you know, accidents, or if something wacky's going on, he is still, you know, going out in there.
You're going to have to watch it, and I really want to hear your thoughts about it when we start the next episode. Yeah, we'll talk about it for a minute. I would
love to watch it over the weekend. Yeah, it's on Hulu, you said?
Promise you, it's better than Sasquatch.
Christ, that's not hard.
Yeah. But I think David is a very, very, like, I think he's genuine. I think he's passionate about what he's doing here, because, like, he's never suggesting anything. He's never, like,
nice,
doing anything wild in the interviews. He just asks them what happened and puts together the facts and the statements. He never, like, looks at the camera and he's like, it was Bigfoot, you know?
Does he offer
not
any kind of conclusion, or does he offer any kind of hypothesis?
Nope. Okay. Nope. I think it'd ruin it if he did. Mm. I'm sure he has one in his head, but he's, like, not ready to share it. He's just really exposing the mystery. And, you know, I was really into it this morning when I was taking down my notes about this Tom Messick case, but there's much more interesting ones in the documentary. So if this one didn't grab you, don't let me fuck it up for you.
That's
not just you, but the folks out there listening.
No, it's a wonderful little taste. I think that was definitely enough to hook me to at least give it a shot.
But they'll, you know, he goes further on, they'll find stuff that the guy had, but they'll find it in an area that they already searched, and they're like, how the fuck did his shoes get here?
Yeah,
we searched this place 2 days ago.
You said one of the factors was, like, items of clothing returning, or, like, showing back up in places that they already looked.
Yeah, they'll find stuff in places that they already looked.
That's interesting. That's scary.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, there was one where this guy, like, they found all of his stuff. He was in a mountain range, and they found all of his stuff because he accidentally split off at the wrong spot. Hmm. And then, like, 3 days later, there was a blizzard. So this guy's been missing for 3 days. There's a blizzard. After the blizzard, the temp goes back up and the snow starts melting. That's when they start the search and rescue. And they just find pretty much a trail of his stuff leading all the way to essentially what was, like, the back corner of someone's property, where they found his, like, coffee thermos perfectly placed on a rock, like he was just chilling there having some coffee.
I'm getting in my head, like, this wonderfully terrifying image of a dude, like, stripping naked and, like, trudging to his, like, final destination in the woods, and he sets his coffee mug down on the rock, and he's like, yep, this is my memento, and he goes and dies. That shit's haunting.
Yeah, but, like, everything, like, everyone in their life is like, nobody, like, why would he do that? If that's what happened, mm-hmm. why would he, like, do that? You know what I mean?
So,
seasoned outdoorsman.
I'm pretty ready to call you a seasoned outdoorsman yourself. Have you ever had any kind any kind of wildlife encounters out there? Like, that kind of scared you or left you nervous?
Wildlife encounters specifically?
Yeah, that's kind of where my brain's going. Like, have you ever, like, I think so less of you is to say, like, make a mistake out there that you were like, oh shit, I really fucked it up out here. This is dangerous.
No, I've never made a life-threatening mistake. Mm-hmm. I've made dumb mistakes where I ended up a little colder and a little wetter than I wanted to be.
Unpleasant.
But I've never made a life-threatening mistake. Oh. As for wildlife, I've really, like, the closest encounter, well, I did get charged by a boar once.
Yeah, I heard
like that. Like a legit wild boar, because we have those down here. And there was one time I was sitting up, and it was one of those nights that I was a little colder and a little wetter than I wanted to be. It was like 4 a.m, and it was just pissing rain. And I couldn't sleep, so I was just sitting in my camp stool, smoking cigarettes. And I heard a fucking horse neighing, like, maybe fucking 30 feet away from me. But it was pitch black.
Screw that.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I when I first heard it, I was like, it's the Pale Rider. Like, I'm fucked. I'm done for. The
Pale Rider.
But, like, after my heart rate slowed down, like, there are wild horses in Louisiana. They do like to hang out here. So.
Can I tell you? I'm kind of afraid of
horses. I have another one, but I'm saving it for the personal experiences episode.
Ooh. I remember you suggesting that a while back, and I'm pretty into that one.
I have some good ones.
Perfect.
Nothing that I would call downright paranormal, but definitely very, very weird.
No, I think you and I downright saw a demon in the woods that one day. That was a beast out there.
Oh, yeah. We'll save it. We'll sure. save it.
Sure.
The personal experience episode will come soon.
That's the break. Glass in case both of us are fucked for ideas.
Yeah. But, like, what are you making anything of all this, or do you think there's something there, or do you think he's just grasping at straws?
I think since this is the first time I'm really being exposed to the information, I think it's an interesting kind of experiment that even as someone who's really into this kind of paranormal investigation, like the skeptic type, I'm still trying to find the quote-unquote logical explanation in every single story you tell. I'm going to animals, I'm going to he's old, I'm going to it's weather, like, my own inclination is to think that way, so I'm really interested to see what this guy does in the show to sort of bend my natural state of thought.
Yeah, same. I was like, well, obviously he fucking hurt himself and died. And I think that's easier to believe in the cases where these are not outdoorsmen, because he has a bunch of these. The first documentary, Missing 411, that was about just normal people, but like, these are outdoorsmen. They live to be in the woods. Like, the last guy you'd expect to, like, mess up out there.
I mean, if you're putting yourself in that quote-unquote dangerous situation, you're more likely to have something bad happen, I guess?
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, there's always a risk of going out there, but I don't know. It's just, I watched this, and it definitely has me looking at these things a little differently, you know?
You're kind of psyching me out for our next camping trip.
I'm psyching myself out for the next camping trip, but
I know you said you wanted to do more of a little bit rougher the next time.
Yeah. Yeah. I do want us to all rough it a little bit more, like, next time, but
I'm pretty
maybe we won't go off the grid.
I'm kinda into that. I wanna do a winter camp.
Oh, winter camping's so nice.
That's kind of where my heart is for the next trip.
Okay. So, I wanted to bring back an old segment from before called X Takes, where if you're not familiar, I post my topic on the 4chan board /X, which for those of you who don't know, it is described as the paranormal board. So I posted the cover art for the Missing 411 documentary, and I just said, "Missing 411, does anyone have any idea what's going on in these events?" And I didn't think I was going to get much, but I got a pretty good thread going here. So the top reply, "We need to wipe out Sasquatch. Kill every last fucking one."
Come on, man. That's not the move. Sorry, dude.
Next reply is, "State parks are a good place to kill someone."
You see, this person's okay. Thinking right. That person's on some.
I mean, yeah, that's a very simple explanation. But I don't know. It's just, you'll know, it's the conviction.
That are in these interviews?
That are in these interviews, like, no, for no reason. Because, you know, David used to be a police detective. Mm-hmm. Don't you think he'd explore that angle if he thought something was there?
Some kind of man-made.
Yeah.
Some criminal.
Foul play.
Yeah, that's the word.
Fourth reply gets a little interesting. "In The Hunted, there was the case of the elderly armed hunter who disappeared, and his group heard mechanical noises in the vicinity, which they could not locate. Made me think of the monster in Lost." And then he goes, "Can we talk about the weirdest case in that movie? The impossible photograph." And then he goes into green text. "Hunter in a deer stand sees a weird cloaked blob. Takes a pic. Camera produces this bizarre image with dimensions that are mechanically impossible, which was verified by the manufacturer." And then he leaves us with this last line, which is great. And he goes, "Sasquatch can't get the blame for everything."
I'm super into that last one. That's your MVP reply.
Right. This next guy, he's kind of sounds like a fucking nerd. Kind of sounds like he's lying on the internet for fun.
Okay.
He goes, "Bit of an aficionado of these myself. You would have to put them up on a big board and look at correlating facts. And since most are in rural locales, possible suspects if you could find anyone. Hard for a guy from outside that area. I met an actual serial killer in a vets program I was in. He had just got out of prison after 24 years. Conviction was for a punk he had carried halfway across America to a local event. He killed the guy with the guy's own gun, got caught. Dude told me some crazy stories that are probably true. All sorts of creepers out there other than Bigfoot and aliens. They may exist, but rather bet my money on the criminal group or the lone nut. After the shit I have heard/learned, I will never go into the wilds alone and unarmed again. I have plenty of field experience, plenty alone, not afraid of much, include death in that. Just why risk being a random target for no reason? Just saying." Yeah, this guy fucks.
There's a lot of like set dressing about that, a lot of hoorah in there, but there's something you can glean from it.
Yeah, he's obviously leaning more towards the serial killer aspect.
Sure.
I guess.
I mean, I feel like this one pairs nicely.
And I mean, we talked about that. Go ahead.
I was going to say it pairs nicely with the topic you had about, the battle royals in the woods.
Yeah. I mean, I was just going to mention, I talked about that in Human Hunting, that guy that would just release women into the Alaskan wilderness and hunt them down. You know?
But Tom, the guy that you were talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
With all his hunting crew, like... Hmm.
Yeah, he was with all his buddies, and they were all, like, within a kilometer of each other. You know?
That one's tricky, but it's definitely pulled me in.
So the next reply I got is, "I've wondered if the Sasquatch is an ancient race that has survived in secrecy. They are highly intelligent and actually run everything through a shadow government. I've wondered if they are even the ones behind the Tic Tac and other UFOs." That is not relevant to what I'm talking about at all.
you all, like, it was so close to me being super into it, and then he got in about the shadow government.
Yeah. Here's the next reply. Caves eat people, so the logical response would be to keep throwing humans into caves until the humans do not go into caves anymore. 8 billion units of human, time to put them to use.
That is an actual truth. I'm super not spelunking. You could not get me to be going in a cave.
Yep, I will never be in a cave. Nope.
I mean, maybe like a cool shallow cave, but you're not getting my ass like where the sun doesn't shine in a cave.
Yeah.
Ooh. I'm in this closet now and I'm getting this funky feeling. Ooh.
Yeah, that's a little, I don't know how you do that. Let's see. Let me just refresh the page. No new replies. But here's my last reply, and this guy kind of wants to bring it back down to a grounded reality. And he goes, variety of causes along with the variety of victims. I don't buy any of the Sasquatch or feral people bullshit. Some of the bodies were found naked near water, which are both consistent with hypothermia. It still happens in the spring and summer if the nighttime temp does drop low enough. Some are probably animal attacks, some are probably overdoses or aneurysms. One seems to be a case of an illegal adoption. One girl in Yosemite went missing in a crowded park, so she was probably abducted. The mystery is why a Parks Department employee doesn't want to provide her case files to a random guy on the internet, which is explainable for a variety of reasons, especially if it indicates incompetence or liability on the part of the department. The revenue lost by spooked tourists is another motivator to keep things hushed. The lone case I have actually found intriguing is the one where the SF were called in. That piques my interest more than anything else I have read. So this guy, I mean, he do be making some points.
I'm pretty interested in that one. I was going to say, yeah, with the bodies of water and the hypothermia, that really clicks with me.
See, the one that doesn't make sense to me, the one that really sticks out to me in his, like, case points,
yeah,
is the boulder fields.
What the hell does that mean? Yeah, I thought about that.
She said, like, there'll be a huge patch of, like, granite boulder fields near some of these disappearances. And, like, when I started picturing that one in my head, like, yeah, I don't know. I pictured like myself alone in like a big boulder field and like just something happening, like the rocks start to move, man.
Or something, yeah, comes around the corner. That's
So I don't know. This really just spoke to me, and I thought it would be really fun to talk about it because I've been on a whole woods kick of like finding cursed things in the woods. It really does remind you, if you're a fan of that really famous creepypasta, the one about the search and rescue park ranger, I urge you to watch this documentary. Missing 411 is good as well, but I definitely believe that Missing 411 The Hunted is the better of the two documentaries.
How many?
That, like, just go check them out. That's really all I can say.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a movie.
Ooh, okay. Cool.
If you don't have Hulu, it's also free on YouTube with ads.
That makes it a lot more digestible, sure.
Yep, it is a nice, crisp, like, hour 37 runtime.
Oh, yeah, I can take that in this weekend.
Very, very digestible. Go watch it. Tell me what you think.
That's a guaranteed. I'm super invested in that now.
We're gonna hash it out on the beginning of the next episode. I urge all you, the viewers, to go watch it as well, so you can. I don't know. I mean, I didn't know if there was a good way to talk about this without spoiling the whole documentary. Mm-hmm. So all I talked about was the first case, and he goes over like four or five cases in the documentary. So if you like this, if you thought this was interesting, I promise you that the other ones are interesting as well.
Yeah,
more so interesting.
Let me hear your thoughts. Let's get a little conversation going.
Yeah, definitely. We'll talk about it next week.
Sounds good.
But do you have any more closing thoughts on Missing 411? Are you ready to move on?
My closing thoughts on 411 are, goddamn, there's so much shit that happens that we don't know, and like peeling away that pride, that like self-assurance that you have, I think is almost a safety measure these days.
For sure. If you're going out in the woods, like, just as a safety thing, I guess almost a disclaimer, but tell someone you're going into the woods. Have a plan. Bring everything that you would need and tell that person when you should be expected back so that they can start looking for you immediately.
Time is of the essence in a situation like that, for sure.
I have a plan when you go into the woods before the fourth dimensional machinations attack you.
Yeah, before the boulders move and the walls close up around you.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've said my piece. I'm ready to move on to what you brought me this week.
Fantastic. Yeah, I'm happy to take the baton. So, the reason I even did the freaking Sasquatch review last time was because I really wanted to do an episode about demons of the steppe. I thought like creatures in the grasslands was super interesting and evocative to me, and it was just taking a lot more time to dig into than I had thought, so I was like, oh shit, I need something to tell for this week, and I threw on a show on Hulu, like a lazy, like, didn't do my homework type thing.
Oh, I thought it was good.
I thought it fulfilled its purpose, but it also gave me the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, your mic's really
for
good.
Sure.
I'm not getting any train.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Sweet. It's going, like, right by my fucking house.
Whoever manufactured your mic needs a raise, because that shit is not coming in.
Well, anyways. Yeah, you told me you wanted to do step demons.
Yeah, because, so, I'll start from the beginning of my fascination. Have you ever played the game Pathologic or Pathologic 2?
Nope, never even heard of them.
They are these horror, kind of survival-y games that take place in the deep Russian steppe.
Really?
And it's all about these local traditions and tribes and these very interesting and scary, like, steppe demons. And it's so freaking cool. And I wanted to find something like that.
Huh.
So
I've never heard of this game.
It's a bit, what's the word? Eurojank? And
Eurojank?
Yeah, the second one came to totally replace the first one. It's just a remake that's actually, like, livable.
Like Evil Dead 2.
Mm-hmm. And it's meant to be painful. It's meant to just be suffering. So if you don't like to feel pain, I wouldn't recommend it to you.
I'm looking at it, and these screenshots look a little less than scary, but, you know, I'm not here to judge a screenshot, judge a game by its screenshot.
But the conclusion of my research didn't really give me that Eurasian Pontic steppe. It brought me a little farther south. I found a lot of fruitful research in the Turkic steppe.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
Now, real quick, before we move on from Pathologic, is it based on actual stuff from that area? Or is it just...
I'm kind of having a hard time finding the provenance of that story and some of those myths, but it's... from what I can tell, inspired by some of those ideas and themes of that nomadic and pastoral communities that are on the edge of, like, the Russian sort of grasslands. Yeah. Because it deals a lot in the themes of, like, industrialization and, like, Western societies mixing with these nomadic cultures. So it's something around that area.
Okay.
And funnily enough, our topic for today is pretty analogous to that. I kind of wanted to theme this one on my favorite demon that I found.
Yeah.
So we are going to take a trip to the Bronze Age. So I'm going to test a little bit of your history today. What's the oldest civilization you can think of?
Mesopotamia.
Yes, sir. That's it. We're going right to Mesopotamia. You got it.
Okay.
So when you think of the Mesopotamians, do you think Babylon?
I think of the Tigris and the Euphrates.
You're fantastic. Right on the mark. So if I had to give it a approximate date, we're sitting at around 2200 BCE. So this is before glass. This is before chariots. This is before, like, anything. Like,
is it before the wheel?
No, we got the wheel.
Okay.
But it's the Bronze Age is remarkably interesting. It's so, like, when people think of ancient history, you know, you sit there in Greece and dudes with, like, really profound logical thinking, but I'm going like 700 years before that, and we're going to the Akkadian Empire. You ever heard of the Akkadian Empire?
I've heard of it. Don't know what the fuck it is.
So these are the dudes who wiped away the Sumerians. So think Gilgamesh.
Oh, okay.
The oldest of the old myths. Like, these are the people who came in after that. And they settled, just like you said, right between the Tigris and the Euphrates. And they would send these expeditions out, and they would occasionally brush as far up as this Turkic steppe lands, this grasslands right in the middle of that Anatolian region. And they had all these fucking sick demons that they associated with that territory. It's going to be a little bit like the shitty woodland creatures of North America, but it's going to be way sicker than that. So,
oh, okay.
The first one I want to share with you is the Utuku.
Utuku.
This society's interaction with demons and the divine had a lot of sacrificing and offerings.
Yeah.
And the Utuku was a demon who traveled between the underworld and the above ground world and would bring these offerings to and fro. It was a bit of a messenger sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And they were known to sometimes take a snack for the road. And if you were out where you weren't supposed to be, if you were wandering and it was walking by, it might just snatch you and take you down to the underworld.
That's funny as fuck.
Like, it's something about these, like, early Mesopotamian religions that are super, super interesting to me, and I feel like they don't get much love.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting to see what the first boogeymen were, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, don't get me wrong, there's plenty of fucking boogeymen, like, to actually be afraid of during that time, like fucking just random ass animal attacks. Probably, like, woolly mammoth was alive back then, right?
I think we're a little late for the woolly mammoth.
I thought it was around at the I saw something about, like, woolly mammoths were still around when the pyramids were built.
Is that true?
That's or is crazy. That like a big fucking lie?
See, in my mind, I thought woolly mammoths died out around 8,000 BCE.
Yeah.
But especially, I don't know, dude. I'm not, this is far out of my pay grade.
Anthropology or biology, whatever the fuck. I don't have any sort of real degree.
Oh, also everything I'm saying is like secondhand of the secondhand. This is all shit we gleamed off of from tablets that people wrote on that are all crusted.
Stuff we think we translated?
Mm-hmm. This is all from nonsense. From a pot? Yeah. By the way, have you ever seen Cuneiform, the language of the Akkadians?
Nope.
Bro, have you ever seen the Predator's language?
Cuneiform. Let me look.
Yeah, let me send you a picture. It looks like...
What the fuck? This looks like a fifth grade art project.
This is like in relation to hieroglyphs, but it looks sick.
Huh.
So this is the script that they're using to write their myth. And another of my favorites that they write about is the Alu.
Alu.
This dude is the first sleep paralysis demon.
Ooh, hate that.
Mm-hmm. The Alu is described as a faceless, earless, noseless being.
Can you spell that for me?
A-L-U. But it's like a weird U with an accent on it, like a triangle or something. It's crazy.
Oh, well.
I don't have that key, so I have to copy and paste it every time I want to look for it.
Alu. Nope. No. It's not what I wanted to look for.
This thing is like too old for Google search.
Really? And would you look up to find any information on it?
All of the research that I pulled from came from this really wonderful document by a Jeanette C. Fink.
Oh, okay.
And it's a bit of a write-up about a couple of tablets that they were examining, and it had a lot to do with the religion and the demons that were present at the time.
Oh, Alu has a wiki page.
Ooh. Are there any images?
Probably not. Let me see. Nope.
Yeah, a lot of these things are, like, so unknowable that there's not even drawings. There's not even estimations. Ooh.
Alu is in the Faith chapter 3.
Oh.
Which, shout out to Faith, one of the best horror games of all time.
And the Alu, it's known to inflict you with sleep naturally, but then it suffocates you into a coma. It like wraps you around and then
lands
on you. Mm-hmm.
That's horrifying.
So that feeling that some sleep paralysis havers of like that weighted downness, that like pressure that you get, is directly out of the Alu's playbook.
Hmm. That's pretty sick.
Now, my personal favorite and the one that really brought me to this topic, the main event, is the Sagasu.
Sagasu?
Sagasu.
Sagasu.
Now, the Sagasu is sometimes used in the Akkadian language as a word for murderer.
Ah.
And there was a belief that out in the steppes, out in the frontiers, it was a lawless land where you'd get raided and attacked and ambushed by tribes.
Yeah.
And since people were a mixture of clay, earth, and spirits, the gods, when a murder happened, and if your body was left, say, in a field somewhere because you just got ambushed,
yeah,
your spirit would roam the land and haunt and attack people around where you were killed.
What? So, like, a ghost?
Basically, a straight-up murder ghost.
So this is from, like, Turkey?
This is in the Turkic steppe, yep.
I see.
And they were describing mostly demons and monsters as things that inflicted diseases, like the studying folk, like the learned doctor types, were using these demons to try and understand all the various diseases that were happening around that time.
So, studying these demons at the time was like a medicinal practice?
It was, in a way, medicinal. They would find ways to help treat the diseases or ways to prevent them from happening, such as don't be around dead bodies and you won't get sick.
I mean, that's a good tip.
It's good
not
advice.
Not gonna lie.
For early civilizations.
For sure.
But the way that they describe these diseases is so interesting. So to be inflicted by one of these demons is to have received the hand of the demon.
Uh-huh.
So the disease in their language is like the hand of the ghost of a murderer.
Wait, say that again?
Someone would come in, say that they're sick, uh-huh. And the priest would say, "You have the hand of the ghost of a murderer."
What?
You have been touched by the ghost of a murderer or someone who was murdered.
That's insane.
I thought this is so interesting and colorful and evocative. Like, early Mesopotamian religions kick ass.
For sure. And I mean, it sucks that, like, you can't do anything to learn about them, I guess.
Oh, I'm going to have a whole pitch and rant at the end of this episode. It's going to get you that information that you want.
But, I mean, this is kind of reminding me of the Origins of the Rake episode, because that turned out to be from the East.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah.
And, like, tracing it down, like, it gets super interesting to me when you can't, like, just Google it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you can barely find any information on it, because that's just how ancient of history this is.
That's definitely what I was feeling. Like, I had to fight, like, the edges of archaeological or human, like, understanding to get some information for this topic.
For sure.
Like, they have not even found Akkad, the old capital of the Akkadian Empire. That city's lost in the real sense.
Really?
Like, they have ideas for Troy, they have ideas for Babylon, but Akkad's gone. Nothing.
Nothing?
They cannot find it.
Lost city, lost religion. Demons. That's fucking insane.
Yeah. And some of the symptoms, it varies from culture to culture. You know, some of these stories and myths meld and change as, like, the Sumerians and the Akkadians and the Assyrians go one after another.
Uh-huh.
And being...
Did your research ever yield you any results of the thing called Lamashtu?
Oh, yeah. Lamashtu was all up in this.
Okay.
That's the creature that I think has received the most current.
It's culture. Definitely the most popular, it looks like.
Yeah. I mean, the dude's in fucking Spelunky, too. Yeah. while we're at the topic of the old Near East religions, do you know the name of the demon in The Exorcist?
No, I've never watched The Exorcist.
Well, one, it's a goddamn classic flick.
Yeah.
Two, the demon is Pazuzu.
Pazuzu. I know that from Futurama.
Yeah, he's in Futurama.
I know it is a real thing.
Mm-hmm. He's actually the rival of Lamashtu, funnily.
Really?
He's this, like, winged, flying demon that competed with Lamashtu for prey. Really, they both were like...
I got his
humans.
Wikipedia up right now. King of the Demons of the Wind.
Yep. He was riding in on the southerly winds or something. Yeah.
Damn. So, like, that's pretty nuts.
They're peeking in just a little bit, but I wanted to bring it back to the hand of the ghost of a murderer disease.
Yeah.
And I wanted to lay out a couple of... symptoms of this disease for you, because there's a lot of records about this demon, you know, attacking people and people coming back sick. So,
right,
they attribute lots of stomach issues, both upper and lower digestion, things like nausea, vomiting, and constipation and cramps.
Uh-huh.
To being attacked by this demon, or if you want to read into it, being all up around dead bodies.
Yeah.
They attribute seizures. And
seizures.
The inability to hear or taste or talk.
Huh.
Now, there's a little bit of a side variant. The inability to speak comes from the hand of a ghost who was burned to death.
Yeah.
And so they come in a little extra flavors.
Okay.
I'm going to give you one of the quotes, and I kind of read it in a pretty funny, dry humor kind of way. It's one of the translations of the cuneiform tablets. It says, "If he is constantly crying softly and rapidly, my stomach, my stomach. The diagnosis is hand of the ghost of a murderer. He will die."
That's some ancient medicine.
Most of them end with "he will die," just right there, no games about it.
That reminds me, have you ever read those green text memes of like the plague doctors?
Yeah, yes, I absolutely have.
Where it's like, claim the little boy has spiders in his head.
Oh, it's absolutely like that.
That's pretty crazy.
This next one is right up that alley. It says, "If he is affected at his backbone and he becomes constipated and his excrement does not come out, the diagnosis is the hand of the ghost of the murderer. He will die."
So if you're a little constipated, it's like, oop, you got ghost.
The murder ghost got you. Yeah, and you're dead.
Wow.
And those are the common ones. There's also, you know, seizures and shaking and blood, I think. A little bit of, like, blood in the eyes and mouth.
Uh-huh.
But mostly it's the stomach issues and the constipation. And then I wanted to kind of bring a modern sensibility into it. And I do believe, from what I could tell, that being around dead bodies isn't in itself poisonous. Like, you're not going to get sick from breathing dead people air and being around corpses on its own right. But if you are intaking a little bit of them, or you're getting some of their, you know, fluids, I guess, or some of their parts in, it does frequently manifest in intestinal problems.
For sure.
So, I just find it super interesting that they build this entire story and mythos around these practical tips.
Yeah.
Like these survival instincts are manifested in these ways.
No, that's... I mean, that makes sense to me. It's like the same thing we always talk about, where it's like, hey, don't go in the woods. There's a Bigfoot out there, you know? It's to keep you safe, because going in the woods is inherently dangerous.
I thought it meshed well with the first half. Like, if we need to tell ourselves cute little stories to stay cool and not go out into the woods where we don't belong, it's doing its job.
I mean, you also never know when they're going to be fucking true.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to risk finding out?
Yeah, do you really want
to? Do you want to get hand of the ghost of the murderer? Don't plunder that dead body.
Do you want to, you know, find the Utuku coming to and fro from our holy land?
Yeah. So, I mean, it makes perfect sense to me.
And then he kind of morphs the Sagasu. He, in the later Babylonian periods, he comes up as... he made it into the big leagues. He's up there in the pantheon. He is... local cities had their own cults and revered specific gods.
Uh-huh.
And he is attributed to being on, like, the council, or being, like, a tool of the god Zababa.
Zababa.
It was a very tasty little name. And he's there's a being called the Weapon of Zababa, Saror and Sarbaz, which they believe Sarbaz might be a morphing in the Babylonian language of Sagazu, because Gaz or Gaz is their word for murder.
Okay.
So, like, this, it's like journeying through that like early culture, like going out to the frontier, finding this sickness, calling it by a demon's name, and watching that like evolve in their culture, I just found super fascinating.
That is interesting. I have Zababa's wiki page up, and apparently he was a god of war.
Yeah, and these were his soldiers, quote unquote.
Huh. I see. It's just insane that like we'll never. So, do you think that like this religion is much more detailed than we'll ever know, and we just won't know because there's no way to?
I absolutely do, because a majority of cuneiform tablets that have been recovered are locked away in Yale's Babylonian archives, in the Royal Museums in England, in the Iraqi Museums, and in Penn Museum. They are almost entirely not scanned and available to the public.
I see. Do you think making it available to the public so widely would, like, help?
I mean, I don't know how much an amateur is going to be translating Akkadian, but to know that tens of thousands of these fucking sick cuneiform tablets are not available to the public is kind of upsetting.
I think we should at least take solace in the fact that they're not destroyed, like, unlike Aztec tablets.
A lot of the ones that I read from you, the quotes, they'll have a little inscription that'll be like, yeah, it's kind of broken. Like, we're doing the best we can here.
Yeah.
But this is kind of my pitch is, hey, how about you release the tablets? Release the tapes. Let me know what was happening with Gilgamesh.
For sure.
But this is, you know, that weird half myth, half historical period. Like every person of prominence in these times has a different biblical name and a relation to the Abrahamic religions.
Like there's the real Alexander the Great and like the mythological Alexander the Great.
Yes, or there's Sargon of Akkad, the original Akkadian founder of the empire, or possibly that's Nimrod from the Bible.
Yeah.
Like this, these are the people, and this is the spot where things like the Tower of Babel are supposed to be. Like these things are so like deeply rooted in a lot of these cultural aspects that we carry through today.
And we just don't know if they were ever real or not.
Let me get the tapes. Release the cuneiform tablets, motherfuckers.
Why do you think it's under wraps? Because people just don't care about it anymore, like we've moved on past that?
I mean,
or do you think it's like for sinister reasons, like Saddam's Stargate or some shit?
I worked in a museum for a little bit, and they were, you know, respectful and delicate with their artifacts, which is completely understandable.
Mm-hmm.
And they were dealing with things from the 18th century. I can't imagine how respectful and delicate you have to be with things from 2200 BCE, like 4,000 years
ago. You probably got to be like, if you breathe on it too hard, it'll like poof into a cloud of dust.
Mm-hmm. And so I understand why you're not really super excited to get the flash cam out and start getting them all scanned and cataloged.
Right.
But I can't help but have a little bit of like colonialism anger about it. Like, you took them all to England, you took them all to America, you could at least let me see them.
Yeah, and now you're just gonna like leave it in a vault.
Exactly. They're gonna sit in a vault for all of time, and I'm never gonna get to hear about Zababa or the Lashu Wars
or Pazuzu.
Well, Pazuzu made it out.
Pazuzu did make it out. He seemed to have like the most extensive history online.
And we've, I think, talked about them before. The Akkadians and kind of the Sumerians and Assyrians, those were the people who were in with the Anunnaki as well.
Really?
That's, I think, the strongest piece of, like, cultural artifacts that have lived on.
See, I know of the Anunnaki. I know a little bit about it, but I don't think we've discussed the Anunnaki on the podcast.
Maybe in a joking sense.
Because, sure, I mean, we make jokes about the lizard men all the time.
Exactly. Like, there's the talk that you have where it's like the lizard people on the moon, and then there's the talk of like the Sumerian gods, Anunnaki, that lived amongst people, these ancient alien type bullshit kind of gets mixed in and muddies the conversation, I do find.
Yeah. For sure.
But you know what would fix that?
Scanning the fucking uniform tablets.
At least the tapes, god damn it. That's the biggest take I had from this was like, oh, I'm picking through these tiny little crumbs of half sentences of texts, and then the lady goes on to the report and is like, yeah, there's hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands of these tablets that we just don't have access to.
Yeah, it's like people, it's like when people like just renew their rights to an IP so that it doesn't become like
money
public domain
person. Yeah.
Yeah, like Nintendo is just sitting on like hordes of dead game franchises that people are like, dude, please make another one. And they're just like, no.
No. This.
Well, what are you doing with it? Nothing.
These museums, I could definitely attribute some kind of selfish personal gain to not doing the good thing.
Yeah, because, I mean, I would love to see a fucking cuneiform tablet. Like, you got that exclusivity.
Mm-hmm.
Of, like, the only way you're going to see these cuneiform tablets is if you fucking come to the museum, dickwad.
And something...
Pay up.
Like, just... It's something that, like, tickles my brain in a way of thinking of, like, these ancient, forgotten religions and demons and deities that can survive, in a way, by bringing them back out to light. Like, you know that idea that, like, gods grow or live because people have their faith in them?
Yes.
Like the idea of like them getting some kind of energy, some kind of strength back because the tablets are out and people are learning about them and there's new resurgence in Assyriology and people get super into that shit again.
Sure.
And then Pazuzu's out in the woods again.
Maybe that's why they're under wraps, you know? Maybe the Anunnaki, the Children of the Matrix, maybe it's all real and they need to pull the wool over our eyes so that, you know, the lizard people don't get any stronger than they already are.
Yeah, like they've won the war and they're containing this faction of demons and gods that rules, that fucking rocks.
Like Cabin in the Woods, kinda?
Mm. Exactly like the Cabin in the Woods. You got it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess we'll just never know.
Yeah, in a sense, I think we were both doing a preview for this episode. We both gave the people and each other a tasty little morsel, and we both have a suggestion for Dan. It was go watch this very interesting, very accessible show on Hulu, and for me, it's to write your museum.
Also free with ads on YouTube.
Oh, and free with ads on YouTube, but
yes, sir.
My suggestion and my preview is to write your museums and tell them to release all the goddamn cuneiform tablets. Oh my god, give me some Bronze Age information. We need it. You have it.
You have any juicy stories about the museum? Is it true that they keep the real ones in a vault below the museum?
It is true that they keep all the cool shit downstairs. And there is a sense of researching and not just displaying. I definitely saw that side of it, where like, this is the good shit that they're not really going to bring up to the public. Yeah.
So is anything that's sitting in the displays, like, is any of that, like, legit? Or, like, is it just all copies of the real shits downstairs?
For my particular museum, about 90% of the things behind glass were real.
Okay.
So they were putting real artifacts out there, yeah.
What was the kind of stuff that they kept downstairs?
Documents, journals, like paper was a very common thing to keep downstairs, or like...
Because that's... Stuff like that's got to be like climate controlled, right?
Oh yeah, all the finest stuff is in like vaults, in like really nice, really climate controlled, really heavily guarded, where if you touch it wrong, the alarms go off and the concrete bricks fall down. Yeah, that kind of way. All true.
The Indiana Jones trap springs.
To tell you the truth, I almost tripped an Indiana Jones trap at my museum.
Really?
Yeah, I got too close to an artifact and the alarm went off and I thought I was going to die.
What was the artifact?
If I tell you, everyone's going to know where I worked. It's a very iconic piece.
Was it the Liberty Bell?
It was not the Liberty Bell, though I did see a guy get like CIA swatted for touching it.
That's funny as fuck.
So, yeah, that's what I got for Bronze Age Step Demons. It's kind of a broad category, but, you know.
I like it. I like going back to ancient history where it's like right when history started.
Literally, like, we barely started writing things down. We don't have
paper. The very beginning of, like, writing and passing stuff on to the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, pretty much the first thing since, like, cave paintings.
It's basically one-to-one to cave paintings, because cuneiform is, like, a symbol language. It uses that symbol. It's the cousin to hieroglyphics, yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. But I like going back that far, because we have the stuff, but we don't know what it is, mm-hmm. You know?
And I thought, you know, I'll do my part one day to share these really cool, interesting things, because... I mean, aren't you tired of Greek monsters?
I am.
Cyclops and the Medusa, bro. Let's get some real sweet Bronze Age step demons in these new things.
Oh, yeah. I love it. That was great.
Great. Well, that's all I got. Yeah.
All right, everybody. Don't forget to subscribe. Check out our past episodes. Hit us up on Twitter at Mad Tower Radio. Email us your experiences at supermadtower@gmail.com. We're out there. Hit us up. We'd love to talk to you. This is Mad Tower Radio, ending transmission.